Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 12, Text 38. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Si Bhagavan Uvacha. Dishyatvam Vibhurashreshta. Swam Nishtam Atmanastita Yane Sri Rupaya Svairam Mohito Pyangamaya. I seem to be losing my voice unexpectedly right now, so you'll have to bear with my so surprising, just all of a sudden. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O best of the demigods, although you've been amply harassed because of my potency in assuming the form of a woman, you are established in your position, therefore may all good fortune be upon you. Since Lord Shiva is the best of the demigods, he is the best of all devotees, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. His exemplary character was therefore praised by this Supreme Personality of Godhead, who gave his benediction by saying, may all good fortune be upon you. When a devotee becomes a little proud, the Supreme Lord sometimes exhibits his supreme power to dissipate the devotee's misunderstandings. After being amply harassed by Lord Vishnu's potency, Lord Shiva resumed his normal, unagitated condition. This is the position of a devotee. A devotee should not be agitated under any circumstances, even in the worst reverses, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 6:22, Yasmin Stito Nadukena Gunapi Vichalyate. Because of his full faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a devotee is never agitated even in the greatest trials. This pridelessness is possible only for the first class devotees, of whom Shambhu is one. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Dapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati sapadantikam vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhu bhayevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siyadvaita Gadadhar Shivas Adhigor Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Greetings from Stuyvesant Falls, which I renamed Visant Falls. I'm on my vacation. People, I guess in America, especially in the cities, they take vacations in August. And what it basically means is for 3 weeks, I'm going to go 2 days to New York City. I don't have any other things externally, and it's just chanting and
just catching up on everything when you have nothing else to do but to sit on your sit at your desk and, you know, do your own cooking, and everything becomes one thing is just reading the Bhagavatam. I'm trying to do that every morning when I get up very early. And the Bhagavatam is heavy. In fact, I have in my mind to write one Monday morning greetings entitled The Heaviest Book in the World. And I'll explain why the Bhagavatam is the heaviest book in the world. And I'm just reflecting my own realizations when reading it, because guru, the Sanskrit word guru, literally means heavy. And there's nothing that weighs more on the conditioned soul who is sincere and therefore has approached the Bhagavatam than knowledge. Because knowledge weighs on our attachments, and knowledge weighs on our ego. And how does it weigh on our attachments? It tells you that this which you like should be renounced. This which you don't like should be accepted. You have to change your orientation in life from based on whimsical samskaras to realities of truth and goodness, not just what we think it is. And it weighs on the thing that is most dear to us in the embodied condition of life, which is the false ego, which is our sense and hope for superiority. Because the Bhagavatam presents the superiority of God, and in that meditation, the painful realization of our relative insignificance, but it's actually a beautiful insignificance. You know, I told you I was going to do this thing about humility, practicing humility, and it's almost like a quest for me. What is this humility? It kind of eludes us almost, really what it is, to intellectually almost define it, because this modesty and low self-conception is so antithetical to the conditioned soul in terms of what they want. And the other hand is, it's not the type of low self-conception or modest, I say modest self-conception, that's a psychological aberration. I've always struggled with this. What is it? So, because what I see is that people with great humility who don't have this self-inflated consciousness, it's a very strong and powerful thing, because you're resisting the irrational impulses of the ego and the senses, and that's such a powerful thing. And you are resisting them because they are telling you something that you're not, that you're the enjoyer and controller. And the humble person realizes that they are not, and they have profoundly realized they are not, because they are experiencing God. And not only experiencing God, they're experiencing the mercy of God, which the humble position facilitates. Because the sense of entitlement prevents you from experiencing or appreciating love, even if you're getting it, because you're not seeing it as love, you're seeing it as something that you deserve. In fact, you're seeing it as something that's below, less than what you deserve. So I wanted to make this distinction, because of seeing, intellectually not grasping, but actually seeing the beauty, the strength of humility, and a type of self-worth that a humble person feels in a way. His self-worth is not that he feels grand. His self-worth is that he feels small, and he's happy with that, because it is his relationship with God that he values, not his position or status in the world as controlling and enjoying. So I thought of kind of an analogy to distinguish this, because I think people can't discuss humility unless they make a clear distinction between that and the lack of self-esteem. Because they both share the concept of a certain type of self-deprecation. Not self-deprecation, but a certain type of feeling I lack something I should be. Because a person in Prema Bhakti feels, I should be a devotee. I am not a devotee. And low self-esteem is, I should be great, but I'm not great. So I thought the analogy would be something like this, and I have to do it very carefully, because when you present analogies, the analogies, you have to be very careful to understand that there's only some parts that you're comparing, not the whole thing. For example, if someone in a romantic mood looks at a lady and said, your face is like the moon, is he mocking her that she has a comical sphere, or is she saying that she's bright? So the brightness of the moon is being compared to a beautiful face. The brightness is being compared to a beautiful face, and not all aspects of the moon. So this is why I'm making this analogy, is what I'm trying to compare is someone who is one thing and wants to be another. And therefore, it causes a certain stress or disturbance in the consciousness. And I'm thinking people who are transgender, they are one gender and they would like to be another. And there's some kind of tension because they're not. They're not happy with what they are. They want to be something else. And then there's a person who's a man or a woman, and they want to be a better man or woman. So there's also the same problem. There's something they're not. But it doesn't cause the same type of angst, where you're feeling you're not constitutionally what you should be, rather than you haven't perfected what you should be. So humility, and you can give me feedback if this analogy is like that. You haven't perfected what you want, but you're satisfied with what you are. and your yearning to be something else is part of that very nature. Not to be something else, to be better than you, is part of that very nature of your relationship with God. Understanding the greatness of God, not wanting to be something else, not wanting to be God, but to be a better servant of God. And therefore, in humility, there are these expressions of disappointment with oneself. But they don't cause a psychological aberration because you're actually happy with what you are. And the more you are humble, the more you're thinking, I don't have, the more your expression of the soul and your verification of who you are is manifest. I'm not sure how I went into that, but that's anyway, somehow I'm talking about it. That's really what I want to discuss, because I thought first you have to define it. So I kind of defined humility as I had a definition of it. Well, so this is how I define humility. After seeing humility, reading about humility, and then trying to conceptualize it in its unique way so that it doesn't become juxtaposed with a psychological aberration or a psychological problem, but actually it's a spiritual glory that may have the external form of that type of angst with oneself, is that humility is when one accepts that there's something higher than one's opinions and desires, that there's something important, more important than one's opinions and desires, that is the authority for one's life. That one's own opinions and one's own desires are not one's authority. And not only the acceptance that there's some truth higher than one's opinion and desires, but embracing that position. But actually, I called it many times happy small. Anyway, I'm still conceptualizing how I put this all together in a, and then I'm going to discuss the practicing humility. And this is just one thing. I'm going to discuss the actions of practicing humility, the mindset of practicing humility, and the spiritual practices that cultivate humility. Okay, somehow my mind is not going in this. I'm going to go back to the story of the Bhagavatam where I am, and we'll see how far we get with that. It wasn't the lucidity and clarity that I wanted, so it's good for me to get it out, and then I can figure out how to do that without getting into the details. So here it's talking about
Mahas?
Lord Shiva. Yes.
Yeah, I think you said that you wanted feedback, but I didn't know if you were supposed to wait till the end.
If I wanted to what?
To wait until the end. Because
oh,
like
no, you can give me feedback now. You can get me
feedback.
You can give me some feedback.
Yeah, I. You know, remember where you said that, well, by the way, I'm so happy that a person who explains subtleties as well as you do is discussing my favorite subject. But my question was, when you said that a person who is spiritually humble, by that humility, he is able to manifest devotion even more because, in other words, the smaller he feels, the more he's able to manifest humility. So I'm wondering if you could, explain that.
Okay. I will leave time at the end of the class for that. Okay?
Okay.
But,
right.
I appreciate the feedback. I'll definitely leave time. But I just want, thank you, Gail. I just wanted to get back to this story.
Okay.
Gail, mute your phone. So,
Okay,
here's the story with what I'm reading now in the Bhagavatam. Is the Supreme Lord in the form of Vishnu took the side of the demigods to get the nectar from the demons, and he manifested the most beautiful form. And we are controlled by our attachments. And therefore, beautiful women can control men. And the presence of women, generally, it has an effect on the consciousness of men, handsome men, women, etc. But this is the Supreme Lord manifesting a beautiful form. Manifesting a beautiful form to bewilder the demons. And then Lord Shiva has a desire to actually see this form, and that's what's happening. He's Mohini Murti, and he's comes to Vishnu and wants to see that form, understanding that he's transcendental and he can't be disturbed. And Prabhupada, in purports of this, talks about brahmachari. If he protects his semen by celibacy, he's not attracted by the beauty of a woman. And if he can remain a brahmachari, he saves so much time. And if one is educated in this way, so, but somehow or other, this form is not just the external, it's the internal potency. And the internal part means Krishna. And Krishna is all attractive. And Krishna can bewilder anyone. That's the whole story of the deity of Madan Mohan. That Cupid tried to bewilder Krishna. And he aimed his arrow at Krishna, and to aim, you have to focus on the object, and he focused on Krishna, the source of all attractiveness. And Cupid became so bewildered. So generally, one who has the attraction for Krishna, Vishyavani Vartante Niraharasya Dayana Raso Rajam Raso, he cannot be allured or attracted by anything. But this was Vishnu or Krishna manifesting the form of a woman, but it's more than just the form of the woman, it's Krishna's internal potency manifest in that form to create the supreme allurement. The supreme shakti or potency to attract and then Lord Shiva. Became bewildered. And he realized how he'd been victimized, and he passed semen somehow, and then he realized he had victimized, and he can understand his position. And then he was not surprised because it was Vishnu acting upon him. And this is also part of Krishna conscious philosophy. The article on Monday morning greetings will be called Epistemology, Metaphysics, and Relationship, discussing how a thorough understanding of metaphysics means to understand the fundamental nature of being or reality. And in Krishna consciousness, that means Krishna and his energies. And when you understand that thoroughly, then you can take with faith the Krishna consciousness. And if you don't have a sufficient foundation or basis in that, it's going to impede your taking to Krishna consciousness. It's going to impede you. You don't understand thoroughly. If you don't understand thoroughly, your faith can be in materialism, or your faith can be in impersonalism, or your faith can be against God or against the form of God. Or you won't know who is God. Just like in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavatam, when Lord, fifth chapter of the second canto, when Lord Brahma is trying to figure out God, and he's approaching Narayan. And then he says, well, I think you must be, I think you must be God, because you're self-sufficient. Chadmad, yes, yeah, from you, everything else. Narayan was very happy. He said, Narayana pro, so, but Veda, Narayana pro tapa, yes, I'm the source of everything. You have understood. He's very happy. So part of Krishna consciousness, and a substantial part of Krishna consciousness, is establishing the fundamental nature of reality that will inform your relationship with it and your identity. Who we are is in relationship to what we are part of. But unless we know what we are part of and understand it very clearly, we are going to have a wrong conception of identity and therefore not be able to satisfy the real self. This is what Krishna consciousness said. I was meditating on 10.8 of the Bhagavad Gita, which I thought in one sense really presents this concept of a necessity for a fundamental understanding of reality as the basis of practicing Krishna consciousness. In fact, Jiva Goswami gives a very nice example. He said, if you're searching for a treasure, the most important thing is to know where it is. And then he said, Siddho Pradesh, that understanding will give you instructions for perfection. Because once you understand where the treasure is, naturally and more easily will come the understanding of the means to extract it and the ultimate accruement of the gold or the treasure. So similarly, once you understand fundamentally what is reality, then more or less automatically the means, it'll be much more, it won't be as difficult to understand the means to understand that reality and the result of doing so. So the Bhagavatam wants to be very, very careful. The same thing with the Gita, that we understand that Krishna is the basis of reality, and that we have to understand the relationship between Krishna and Lord Shiva, who is a very interesting tattva, because he is not a living entity and not God. So stories in the Bhagavatam where Brahma becomes bewildered, Lord Shiva becomes bewildered, is only to help us understand very, very clearly the theme of the Bhagavatam and the theme of reality. Ate chamsa kala pumsa krishnas tu bhagavan swayam. That Krishna is the fundamental basis of reality. And Krishna means Krishna and his energies. Parasya shaktai vividaya suyate svabhavika jnana balakriya cha. Krishna has his energies, his potencies. And that is ultimately what exists. Ultimately what exists is Krishna and his energies. Mayata tammi dam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina. He's pervading everything by his energies. Prabhupada gives the example just like gold mined and gold jewelry. The gold jewelry is also the gold. It's reformed. So the whole universe is God reformed and reshaped for Eko Bahusham in various ways for the exchange of his energies and pleasure. So here, two things are being presented, that Lord Shiva's position is not supreme, but his character is. It's like we are not supreme, but our love can be. Because we are the receptacles for God's love. And we are the receptacles for God's for character and love. And therefore, although we can't have the position of God, we can have the supreme love of God, which is called prema. So here we see that Lord Shiva he composes himself and he's unagitated and not ashamed of the incident that took place, because he understood that that was the internal potency of God that bewildered him. And the principle of bhakti, and one of the subjects of the Bhagavatam is the right situation, stitir, atrasargas visargascha, stitir. And what is stitir? It's the right situation. And what is the right situation? Vaikuntha vijayo, that God is supreme. That's the right situation. And when you have love, then you want the supremacy of the object of your love. In the sense, it becomes the center of your life. And you want the glories of your love. So you're happy. When you love, then love means the happiness. Your happiness is the happiness of your beloved. So here, that's established here. And he says good fortune to you. So Krishna is blessing. Blessings come from superior to subordinate. Just like in the yoga world, you know, some people write me letters or something and they say blessings. But because I've grown up in the culture of India, it always sounds a little strange. Blessings. Blessings come from the superior. Blessings come from the teacher. Blessing comes from the parent. In fact, the flavor, parental flavor of love is called anugraha. It's mercy. I am giving you something. I'm giving you blessings. That's the flavor of love from above. And from below, the flavor of love is respect. Like if Prabhupada walked in the room, you wouldn't, you know, put your hand on his head and say, you know, I bless you. That wouldn't be appropriate. So the blessings are coming from Vishnu to Lord Shiva. So that indicates Vishnu or Krishna's superior position. And establishing one of the fundamental principles of Sambandhagyan, which is the relationship, the proper relationship. Sambandhagyan means knowledge of relationship. So Sambandhagyan, metaphysical knowledge, establishes the proper relationship of everything to God. The proper relationship. We respect, God gives blessings. We take shelter, God gives shelter. We worship God, He maintains and protects us. He is fully independent. Chadmad yasya yaton vayad itiratas charteshviga vigyat sorat. Two qualities of God that distinguish God from every other living entity is abhigya and surat. Surat means fully independent and all-knowing. So blessings, significant. It is Krishna that's offering blessings to Lord Shiva. It is Lord Shiva who is bewildered. Not Krishna, just like when Brahma Vimohan Leela, when Lord Brahma tried to bewilder Krishna, he himself became bewildered. When you try to dominate a superior, your own weakness becomes manifest. Just like a firefly who has relative light in the darkness, if it tries to show its light to the sun, the firefly's potency becomes diminished. And here also another important point is our happiness will be in our position of servant. A simple analogy Prabhupada gives is the happiness of a child will be in the family. Not, let's say the child comes from a good family. So God's family is the best family. So you come from a good family, but you want to be independent and you suffer. You suffer. So, if we want to become independent of God, the fish out of water, they'll be suffering. No matter what you do, they'll be suffering. If you're disconnected from your relationship with God, you will suffer. It doesn't matter how much, because you're disconnected from your soul. There is a disharmony. Go against nature, you suffer. That's a fact. And the suffering is meant to there's suffering. But even if there was no suffering, there would be suffering because there'd be dissatisfaction. Because you can only be satisfied in Dharma. And Dharma, it means to do what you're doing based on what you are. So there can only be satisfaction in Dharma. There can only be satisfaction in acting constitutionally. Nothing can be meaningful, nothing can have meaning, nothing can have satisfaction if it is outside of its nature. So God makes suffering to help us understand that. I gave the example so many times of the frog, that it's better, the water is boiling than very hot, because he's aquatic, so he'll want to be in the water. But the hot water will dehydrate the frog and kill the frog. The boiling water will force the frog to jump out. So that's the nature of the material world. It's going to kill us. It's going to depress us. If we try to be the enjoyer and controller, it's going to leave our hearts bare. So God purifies us. He exhibits his own power, his own control, to dissipate our misunderstanding. Anyway, now in answer to Gail's question, by the way, in terms of the Monday morning greetings, I am planning on getting back to the Bhagavatam, but I want to really prepare something very, very substantial. And I'm waiting for a friend of mine, someone I know, who has the Hindi Bhagavatam tapes of Radha Govinda Swami. And he has to edit them. So he promised me he would get to them and edit to them. But he's a very big businessman, so he's very, very busy. Very great devotee. So when I get those, this is what I want to do. I want to do the sixth canto, the story of Ajamil. And then we can get back to the regular. So that'll be the next project for Sunday. And I should get to that by September. And we'll really get into the sixth canto, which is so important with the holy name. And I'll be in Vrindavan when I'm teaching that. So, and maybe even Govardhan. So that'll be really nice. So in answer to Gail's question, why humility invokes love, well, one way we can look at it is the verse Trinada Pi Sunichena Turora Pi Sahishnana Amanina Madhanena Kirtaniya Sadhari. One should chant the holy name of the Lord. In a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street, more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant constantly. So what is the state of mind what is the state of mind that allows one to do anything constantly? Susukam kartam avyam. Susukam kartam avyam means devotional service is joyfully performed, because all other activities besides devotion, the pleasure is the goal of the activity and not the activity of itself. For example, gyan, the happiness is liberation, or material activity, it's not the work, it's the fruit of the work. But bhakti, by very definition, if you're aiming for the fruit of the work, is no longer bhakti. So bhakti is pleasurable in itself. So here it says, if you are humble, you can have bhakti. So that's the reference. But now the question, why? Because someone who is entitled, not humble, proud, someone who's entitled, they don't feel love. And if you don't feel love, you can't have love. And I gave the analogy, it's my own analogy, but I think it's a good analogy, of the spoiled child. He can never feel love from the parents because they feel they're entitled. So that sense of humility allows your heart to feel love. And unless you're feeling love, unless you're feeling love in your heart, how can you have love? So the Shikshashtakam, I love that purport where it says, just as food and hunger diminish each other, if you have food, then there's less hunger. I always get this wrong. They diminish each other, food and hunger. If there's more hunger, then there's less food. If there's more food, there's less hunger. But love and prema, they increase each other. When you have more humility, you have more prema. When you have more prema, you have more humility. Okay, that's my realization on it for today. Any other questions? Are people still there? Anybody still there?
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Gail, so, you had something else? Yeah.
Well, so I just want to restate and answer my question based on what you said. So if the less you feel out of humility, right? Out of humility. The less you feel like a devotee, the more devotion you will manifest, because the less you feel like a devotee, then when Krishna gives his mercy to you, gives his love, his affection, whatever to you, then
you'll feel it more.
Yeah, because the less deserving you will feel for it, right?
Yeah.
The less deserving you feel, then the more devotion will be invoked in you when you receive the love.
Yes. And so, therefore, that's one answer. There's many answers. I'm not thinking so straight. I've been up since like 12:30, but the next Sunday, I'll still be around. I'll look at my notes. I've answered this in like 10 or 15, at least 4 or 5 different ways. But for today, that's about the extent of it. Okay? Okay,
thank you,
Gail.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello before we go?
Hari Bol Maharaj, Chaitanya Priya.
Thank you so much. Good. Anybody else say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Chota Gopinath.
Kishori Radha.
Hey, Chota. And Priya, I heard Priya. Yes, who else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Lee.
Lee, thanks for coming on. Anybody else? I like this at the end.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Bol.
Hare Bol. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Who is that?
Gordon Maharaj.
Hey, Gordon. No Bhakti immersion this year? I heard you work on the afternoon, so.
I spoke with Carol. I'll be doing some service in the morning and attending the kirtan, but I'll be there Friday morning and Thursday night.
Okay, thank you. Okay, anybody else like to come? Anybody else like to say hello? Excuse me. Okay, I'm going to head out now because I have to do some things.
Hare Krishna. Hare Bol.
Hare Krishna. Daddy.